The Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to break down big, important ideas into something you can really grasp and use. And today, oh boy, we're diving into a really significant book, maybe even a bit unsettling. Jared Diamond's Collapse, How Societies Choose to Fail or Succeed.
Yeah, that title, it definitely gets your attention, doesn't it? Because it hits on this huge nagging question. Why do some of history's most impressive societies, you know, think the Maya or the Vikings out in Greenland, the Eastern Islanders, why did they just disappear?
They reached these incredible peaks of complexity, power, culture, and then poof, gone.
And Diamond's core argument, I think, is what makes this book feel so relevant, almost urgent right now. He's essentially saying societal collapse. It's usually not some random lightning strike, some big mystery event.
Uh-huh.
It's more like a slow buildup, the result of countless choices made over time. So collapse is often, well, it's a choice made bit by bit.
And that idea, especially for us today, living in this super interconnected world facing global challenges, the idea that we actually have agency in this, that it's about our choices.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary, but also incredibly powerful, I think.
Definitely. And to really get the impact of what he's saying, you kind of need to know a bit about Diamond himself. He's not just a historian, not by a long shot.
No, he's a polymath, right? That's the word.
Exactly. Professor of geography at UCLA, sure, but his PhD, physiology and biophysics. He knows evolutionary biology, birds even. It's this incredibly broad background.
And I think that's his superpower, really. If you've read Guns, Germs, and Steel, his Pulitzer winner, you know he doesn't go for the easy answers. He's a systems thinker.
Totally. He uses geography, environment, all these different angles to explain these massive patterns in human history.
He pulls together insights from everywhere. Archaeology, climate science, ecology, history, politics. It's like he's diagnosing civilizations.
Yeah, I mean, who else connects? Like ancient pollen samples, literal dust showing what plants grew thousands of years ago to the political moves Mayan kings were making.
It's pretty amazing. He's not just listing failures. He's trying to build this this toolkit for understanding how societies survive or don't.
Okay, so let's talk about that toolkit. He frames the book like it's part detective story, you know, figuring out these historical mysteries, but also part, well, a wake-up call for all of us.
Right. And to get beyond those simple, oh, they ran out of food or they lost a war explanations, he gives us this analytical framework, the 5-point framework.
Yeah, and this framework is key because it moves away from just blaming one thing. Diamond says, look, for a society to really collapse, you usually see a cluster of factors, typically falling into 5 categories.
Okay, what are they?
So the first 4 are mostly about pressures, often environmental or external. Number 1, human-caused environmental damage. Think deforestation, soil getting ruined, that kind of thing.
Okay, makes sense.
Number 2, climate change. And this could be natural cycles, things getting colder or drier. 3, hostile neighbors. You know, warfare, constant threats.
Uh-huh.
And 4, loss of support from friendly neighbors. Maybe vital trade routes break down or allies disappear.
Wait, those all sound like major problems. Yeah. But you said 5 points.
Exactly. And this 5th one, this is really the heart of the book, I think. It changes the whole picture. Point 5 is a society's collective response to those first 4 problems.
Ah, okay. So it's not just what happens to you.
It's what you do about it. That's the crucial part. It brings human decisions right back into the center. A drought might happen. That's nature. But whether that drought leads to collapse, that depends on the choices the society makes. Do they adapt? Do they conserve resources? Or do they just keep doing the same thing that's not working anymore?
And he uses these case studies to hammer this home, right? The contrasts are just stark. We should probably start with the most famous one, the ultimate isolated cautionary tale, Easter Island.
Oh, yeah. Easter Island is like Diamond's perfect tragic laboratory experiment. You've got Polynesian settlers arriving on this incredibly remote island, very limited resources. And what do?
Build the giant heads, the Moai.
Right. Driven by this intense rivalry between clans, almost like a religious competition, pouring all their energy and resources into carving and moving these massive statues.
On trees.
Every single one. They cut down all the palm trees, probably using them as rollers for ropes, maybe firewood. And by doing that, they completely destroyed their own life support system.
So the consequence was total ecological suicide, basically.
Right.
Massive soil erosion, no wood left for canoes, which meant they couldn't fish effectively anymore.
And then predictably, starvation, chaos, and evidence of warfare. It's just the clearest possible example of a society consuming itself into oblivion because they wouldn't stop pursuing these unsustainable cultural goals.
Wow. It's a chilling lesson about living within your means, whether your island is tiny or, well, planet-sized.
Exactly. But failure isn't always about just using too much. Sometimes it's about being too stubborn, too rigid. Which brings us to the Greenland Norse.
Ah, this one is fascinating because it's like a controlled experiment, almost. Mm-hmm. Same place, same changing climate, but two different groups.
Right. You had the Norse, the Vikings, and the native Inuit living in the same Arctic environment. And then the climate got colder, the little ice age hit. Both groups faced the same challenge.
But with very different outcomes.
Dramatically different. The Norse failed, completely died out, essentially because they just refused to adapt their European ways. They insisted on raising cattle, which destroyed the fragile topsoil there.
Instead of, say, hunting seals like the Inuit.
Exactly. They built these big stone churches, tried to maintain this European social structure. It just wasn't suited for Greenland. And crucially, they saw the Inuit as, like, savages or something. They wouldn't learn from them.
So they wouldn't adopt Inuit survival techniques, the kayaks, the seal hunting strategies, things that were proven to work there.
Nope. They basically starved to death, surrounded by potential food sources they considered beneath them, all because they clung so tightly to an identity, a culture, that just wasn't viable anymore in that place at that time.
It really makes you wonder, is survival just about resources? Or is it about being willing to question your own values, your way of doing things?
That's the core question Diamond raises there. The Inuit survived, they adapted. The Norse didn't, they vanished. It shows how failure can be a kind of cultural choice, not just an environmental destiny.
Okay, let's fast forward. How does this apply today? Diamond uses the example of Hispaniola, the island shared by Haiti and the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, this is a powerful modern case study. Same island, same basic geography and climate. But walk across the border or fly over it. The difference is shocking.
You can literally see the border from the air, right? Deforestation on one side.
Catastrophic deforestation and visible poverty on the Haitian side, linked heavily to decades of corrupt governance and, well, short-sighted environmental policies. Then you look at the Dominican Republic side, much greener. They've actively worked to protect forests, manage resources.
And the economic outcomes are vastly different, too.
Hugely different. It just blows up the idea that geography is destiny, especially for poorer nations. It shows how different political choices, different policies about managing natural resources lead to drastically different long-term futures, even for neighbors sharing the same piece of land.
It's a stark reminder that governance really, really matters.
Absolutely. But, you know, Diamond doesn't just leave us with warnings. He also points to successes. Societies that did face huge environmental crises and managed to turn things around, like Tokugawa Japan.
Right. This was back in the 17th to 19th centuries.
Yeah, roughly 1603 to 1868, Japan was facing a massive deforestation crisis. Population growth, demand for timber, for building, for fuel. They were stripping their islands bare. Sounds familiar, right?
Very familiar. But they didn't collapse.
No, they implemented a really comprehensive top-down solution. The shogun, the ruler, basically put in place strict forest management. We're talking rules about where you could cut, mandatory replanting, rationing wood, developing alternative fuels. It was a huge national effort.
So they consciously decided to prioritize long-term survival over immediate consumption.
Pretty much. And it worked. They turned the corner. The lesson there is powerful. Large, complex societies can solve these kinds of problems. It takes political will, long-term thinking, and cooperation, but it's possible. It pushes back against the idea that our modern problems are just too big, too complex to fix.
Okay, so we've seen the framework, seen the examples, but why do societies make these disastrous choices? It's not like everyone wakes up deciding to destroy their environment.
No, exactly. Diamond digs into the psychology behind it. Collapse often results from lots of small decisions that seem perfectly rational to the individuals making them at the time, but they add up to collective disaster.
And he talks about specific mental traps, right?
Yeah, two really important ones. The first is called creeping normalcy.
Creeping normalcy. What's that?
It's when change happens really slowly, incrementally. Like, imagine a forest getting thinner year by year, or a river getting just a tiny bit more polluted each season. It happens so gradually that people don't perceive it as a crisis.
Uh-huh. Each little step down feels
Yeah.
normal.
Right. You just get used to the slightly worse conditions. You adapt without really noticing the overall trend until you hit a cliff, a tipping point, and suddenly it's too late.
That sounds disturbingly familiar.
And closely related is landscape amnesia. This is more about generational change. Each new generation grows up seeing the environment in its current state and accepts that as the baseline, as normal.
So they don't realize what's been lost.
Exactly. Maybe your grandfather remembers when the hills were covered in forest, but you've only ever known them as scrubland.
Yeah.
You don't feel the loss in the same way. The collective memory of what the environment could be or used to be just fades away.
Which makes it harder to argue for restoration or conservation, I guess.
For sure. And this ties into another recurring theme, the role of the elites, the decision makers. Diamond points out this frequent conflict between the short-term interests of the powerful and the long-term well-being of the whole society.
So are the elites just selfish or insulated?
Often it's insulation. Societies tend to get into trouble when the people making the big decisions are shielded from the negative consequences of those decisions, at least initially.
Like the Mayan kings focusing on building monuments.
Right, things that boosted their prestige and power now, while maybe ignoring the soil erosion that was undermining the food supply for everyone else down the line. If the bad stuff only affects the peasants, the elites might not feel the urgency to change course until the whole system starts to crumble around them, too.
Okay, let's pull out some of the really sticky ideas from the book. Things that make you go, Diamond asks this one question about Easter Island that just haunts you.
Oh, I know the one you mean. What did the Easter Islander who cut down the last palm tree say while he was doing it?
Yeah. It's terrifying because the answer is probably nothing dramatic. He likely wasn't thinking, I'm destroying our world.
No, he was probably just thinking, I need this log to move a statue, or my family needs firewood. He was acting rationally based on his immediate needs and the cultural norms of his time.
And yet, collectively, that perfectly rational individual action leads to total ruin. It shows how easily societies can just walk off a cliff together, following rules that no longer work.
It's a chilling thought. Another big one is what Diamond calls the paradox of success.
Right, the idea that societies often start to decline right after they reach their absolute peak.
Exactly. It seems counterintuitive, but he finds that peak population, wealth, and power can actually happen just a decade or two before the steep slide begins.
Why is that?
Well, often success breeds overconfidence. It can also mean that the very systems and strategies that led to success, maybe really intensive farming or a specific kind of trade dependency, become rigid. They become vulnerabilities when conditions inevitably change, like a shift in climate or trade patterns.
So success makes you complacent, less adaptable.
It can, yeah. You become invested in the status quo, blind to the need for change, until it's really hard to pivot.
And then there's the final thought, which is actually kind of hopeful, in a way. Diamond says something like,
we are the first people who can learn from the distant past because of our knowledge of what happened.
Yeah, that's it. We have the history books. We know how these stories played out.
We have the data, the Maya, the Norse, the Easter Islanders. They didn't know about each other's fates. They didn't have the benefit of hindsight from thousands of years of documented collapses and successes. We do. We're not flying blind.
Okay, so let's make this really concrete. How do we take these lessons and apply them? If we think about creeping normalcy, how do we spot that in our own lives, our own communities?
Well, you start looking around with that lens. Is local infrastructure slowly degrading? Are green spaces disappearing bit by bit? Is political polarization getting worse incrementally?
Yeah, things you kind of get used to.
Exactly. Or think about climate change. It's the ultimate example of creeping normalcy on a global scale. Fighting that requires consciously noticing the slow changes and refusing to accept decline as inevitable. It applies to your local town council just as much as global summits.
And what about for businesses? Is there a message here beyond just be green?
Oh, absolutely. The core message is that sustainability isn't just some nice-to-have ethical goal. It's fundamentally about long-term viability. Businesses that focus only on short-term profits, that mine their resources, whether that's timber, water, or even the goodwill of their employees or community, are essentially following the playbook of collapsed societies.
They're creating systemic risks for themselves and everyone else.
Precisely. That idea of the insulated elite making decisions with consequences they don't immediately feel. You see echoes of that in corporate boardrooms or even in things like the 2008 financial crisis. Individually rational choices adding up to collective disaster because the risks weren't properly managed or felt by the decision makers early on.
And that HDDR example, that feels like a direct lesson for governments everywhere.
It couldn't be clearer. Protecting environmental assets, forests, clean water, healthy soil, isn't an expense to be minimized. It's a fundamental investment in national security, economic stability, and long-term prosperity. Ignoring it is. Well, Diamond shows us where that path leads.
So the big takeaway seems to be that at its root, societal stability hinges on managing your resource base sustainably.
That's the bedrock. Everything else, politics, economics, culture, rests on that foundation. If the foundation crumbles, the rest follows. That's the core insight of collapse.
But he ends on a note of hope. Cautious optimism, maybe?
Cautious optimism, yeah. He emphasizes that collapse is a choice. And unlike any society before us, we have unique advantages. We have incredible technology, instant global communication, and this vast library of historical knowledge about what works and what doesn't.
We have the tools. We know the patterns.
We do. We have the potential to choose success. The big question Diamond leaves us with, really, is whether we have the collective wisdom and the political will to actually use those tools to overcome those psychological traps like creeping normalcy and short-term thinking.
It really puts the ball in our court, doesn't it? A challenging but ultimately essential read.
Absolutely essential.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.